Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland. We are broadcasting from the Speaker's Lobby at the State Capitol in Pierre, and joining me is Attorney General Marty Jackley. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy it.
Recently, you presided over the National Association of Attorneys General meeting. Where were you at?
We were in South Carolina. It was one of those opportunities where all the attorney generals of the nation come together. We talk about topics that are important to our home states. Certainly, we're always talking about controlled substances, human trafficking. This year we added the 24/7 sobriety program as part of the discussion. We had some prosecutors come in that had prosecuted Ferguson, the Aurora theater shooting, to kind of talk to us about how to prosecute high-profile cases, how to address both the media side of it as well as the court side of it. So it was a very good and productive meeting.
And what did you learn?
You know, one of the big things that we talked about was the fantasy sports betting. And I earlier this week had issued really the decision as Attorney General that we were not going to seek felony indictments, that this has been a topic of great disagreement across the nation, both with attorneys general and obviously with gaming commissions. You know, they're estimated as many as 25,000 South Dakotans participate in the fantasy sports betting. So I've really signaled that we would not seek those felony indictments, that we would go back to the legislature and indicate that if you are in fact going to ask an attorney general to take away, you know, liberty and freedoms in criminal prosecutions, that we have to have a clear definition in South Dakota as to what is gaming and what are the consequences if you violate those statutes.
So we don't have that in South Dakota. We don't have clear rules?
Well, we don't. We have a constitution that really is interpreted as limited gaming. We have a very general prohibition on gaming that's a misdemeanor. And then we have some felony statutes that were put in place back in the year 2000. But obviously they don't necessarily fit with this fantasy sports betting, with the phone apps and some of the new technology. One of the biggest concerns is in the debate is whether or not this fantasy sports betting is a permissible game of skill or whether it's an impermissible game of chance. And that's a debate going on really in every state. In fact, the New York courts are now addressing it. The New York Attorney General is in a battle with some of the major companies. So we're looking for some definitions there. But these are all really civil proceedings. And so I put it back on the legislature to give us some direction, to give the prosecutors of the state direction. If you want this to be a crime, we have to have clear rules so that South Dakotans know whether or not they're violating it, and we have the ability to enforce that.
Is it a state issue or is it a federal issue? Because it would be across state lines, wouldn't it?
You know, that is one of the other issues that's talked about. You know, certainly there's the WIRE Act, which is a federal act that's out there. I recently signed on a letter. My position as Attorney General is certainly when it comes to Deadwood, we call it the brick-and-mortar gaming, the historic gaming, or when it comes to the state-sanctioned lottery, those are regulated by our state, and we're very protective of that. But when it comes to some of this internet or phone app gaming, that's a different story, and we are looking for some federal guidance on that. And I think the states are generally open to having the federal authorities regulate that, and they did regulate it up to the year 2011, but then the United States Attorney General himself took a different position on it, and so they're no longer regulating sports betting after 2011.
But is fantasy football, fantasy gaming, is that sports betting since you're doing individual players?
You know, most of it clearly isn't. My son is part of a fantasy football league. There's no money exchange. And so what many, many South Dakotans do where there's no wagering or money or thing of value exchange is perfectly legal. The gray area is when you have the betting and you include money with it. And that's when the question comes, is it a game of skill or is it a game of chance? And there's an ongoing debate across the nation where even attorneys generals are disagreeing on that.
Do you ever just want to say depends on who's on your team, if it's skill? No, I'm kidding.
Whether you win or lose. So that would be one way to approach it. But we did indicate that we just felt if you're going to prosecute somebody and take away their liberty and their freedom, you got to be clear on the law. And our law is anything but clear. And so I think this session you're going to hear more and more about that, whether or not this type of gaming will be legal, and putting on reasonable protections if it is legal, such as letting minors participate in those type of protections that we see with e-cigarettes and various other things.
Okay. Human sex trafficking, you mentioned, was a topic at your meeting. What kinds of things are happening across the country there?
You know, some of the big things are attorney generals are oftentimes running the same operations, the catch a predator type operations that we do here in South Dakota. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a joint operation. That's federal, state, and local authorities, typically run by the Division of Criminal Investigations, but we work very well together. That doesn't occur necessarily in other states, so sometimes a large part of that topic is what do we need to do to work better in these operations with federal, state, and local authorities. And I think that's where an area, much of the time South Dakota can add to, that we do things right. We wisely share and use joint resources in both the investigation and the prosecution. The other issue is with asset forfeiture. How do we address those human traffickers that are doing this for profit? How do we take away their profits and their assets? We've done it right here in South Dakota. We have an asset forfeiture statute that the Attorney General brought. I'm looking at tweaking it this session to include the federal offenses, because oftentimes we partner up with federal authorities so that way we can get at these assets, whether or not it's a state or a federal prosecution.
And what happens to the assets?
The assets, first of all, go to pay for the operations, and then they're reserved for the victims, so that the victims of human trafficking actually receive the money back from the bad guys.
And we've made a dent? Have we made a stand, or does it keep coming?
You know, certainly it's out there. We, during our operations, we've made 29 arrests. They've been very serious cases. I think that's 29 times we've removed predators off of our streets, but also it's served as a deterrent. There's still a ways to go. I was just out in Rapid City the other day when we sentenced the teacher that had done some pretty horrific things and really the unthinkable with kids. And that's another area where we're looking at some amendments to our child exploitation statutes. We haven't always received the highest grades in some of the national organizations. There's some things we can do legislatively to better protect kids. And as Attorney General, we plan on bringing the sexual exploitation amendments, some human trafficking amendments, and really shore up our sex offender registry. We have a very strong sex offender registry, but there's some things we can do to better protect South Dakota. I think we need to add tribal offenses. We have more and more partnerships with our reservation communities. We need to make sure we're capturing all sex offenders that are coming in and out of Indian country.
Okay. And these are things that you need legislative approval.
We do. And so what I typically do as Attorney General, I have a package, usually ranges from half a dozen to a dozen pieces of legislation. I begin that work in the Senate Judiciary. Former Chief Teason, Senator Teason, is the chair of that. We'll have many discussions with him and that committee. And then those pieces of legislation that deserve to go on will move forward in the legislature.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit, finish out from that meeting. Anything else that came out? Oh, 24/7.
You know, this is kind of South Dakota's further opportunity to give back to the Attorney General community. I mean, I've taken many areas of those meetings and brought them back to South Dakota, like the prescription drug monitoring program that we have here, that's really a prevention over prosecution program. That came from these meetings. Last year's session, the Narcan drug, which is where we equip our first responders with the ability to reverse a drug overdose. Those were ideas that come from other places. The 24/7 program is really our contribution back to the attorneys general. It's a voluntary offender pay program. It's expanding nationwide. It recently received federal approval to be on parallel track, or we call it parity with Ignition Interlock. And so we will be protecting our South Dakota National Highway funds with that program. And so we had a presentation. Judge Larry Long, former Attorney General Long, who is really the pioneer of the 24/7 program, I invited him out. He came and was a part of a discussion with myself, Attorney General Tim Fox out of Montana, where 24/7 has really gone statewide, and really presented it to the attorney generals as an opportunity for them as the chief law enforcement officers to work with their local law enforcement, that's their sheriffs, to put in place a sobriety monitoring program that has proven results.
Okay. And quickly run down what all it entails in South Dakota, and then will other states be able to tweak it for them as well?
That's exactly right. I mean, really, when you look at the 24/7 program, it has three components. It has the breathalyzer test, which every sheriff's office, every chief of police has, and so at 7 in the morning and at 7 at night if somebody's in trouble, rather than keep them in jail away from their jobs, away from their children and families, they have an opportunity to be out working. And as long as they're not drinking, they show up at the sheriff's office, and twice a day they have to prove up that they haven't been drinking by blowing in a breathalyzer. Because we're a rural state, that doesn't always make sense to have a rancher drive in, or there may be certain jobs where you just simply can't leave during those times. And that's where it's called the scram bracelet. It's what Lindsay Lohan had to wear, which basically detects alcohol use through perspiration. And that's another mechanism that we're able to use. And then the third mechanism is that ignition interlock. And that's just generally your vehicle won't start if you've been drinking. You have to look into the camera, prove it's you, blow into the tube, and if you're clean, your vehicle will start and you go to your job. If it's not, then you'll get paid a visit by law enforcement and we'll resolve what you've been doing.
And it's making a difference?
It's making a huge difference. The RAND Corporation came in and did a national study of the South Dakota 24/7 program. And we have proven conservative results that we reduce DUI reoffending by 12% and we reduce domestic violence by 9%. And my pitch to the Attorney Generals of the nation, this is a proven program and it's offender pay, which is an easy thing for a state legislature to grasp onto, particularly in tough budget times. And we're not the only state dealing with an education issue or a Medicaid expansion issue. We need programs such as this where it's not on the back of the taxpayers, it's on the back of offenders, but it's giving those offenders really the opportunity to prove up themselves and to get back in the good graces of the community.
And is this usually part of the sentence, first offender, second offender, third offender, where in the process?
There's some discretion to the judge, but it's tied to a driving permit, your driving privileges. If it's your second DUI, or if you had above a 0.017 blood alcohol content, then in order to get your driver's license back, it's a requirement.
Okay. And it's in every county?
It's in all of our counties in South Dakota, not at any given one time, but all of our counties are participating in it. It's been something that's worked well in Indian Country and something that we're using, too, with the Department of Corrections. It's just simply made sense here in South Dakota, both on the right thing to do and a cost-effective mechanism to protect the public.
So 2 years ago, we saw the judicial reform. Last year was the juvenile justice reform. What kinds of things? Well, first, how are those two things working in your mind?
You know, certainly it's early on. I mean, much of what I deal with as Attorney General is violent crime, and we excluded out violent crime. That wasn't part of the reforms. I think overall, we need to make sure we take an opportunity to let it work. I think, in fairness, drug courts are working well. There is a concern that some of the costs associated with Senate Bill 70 and Senate Bill 73 are falling on the counties. We need to be mindful of that, listen to the counties, and make sure as a state that we're doing this right and we're not putting too much on the backs of local authorities.
Will we see some tweaks to those?
You know, I would envision over the next few years there's going to be the need for tweaks. It's something that is inevitable. Some things are going to work and some things are going to need a little bit of change. And I think, again, part of that little bit of change is we're seeing that there are some added stresses and requirements on local law enforcement. Some of that we hope with the SAVIN program, the victim notification, that we can pull back some of those requirements and those burdens. And only time's going to tell. But we need to be mindful of that, especially for those county commissions that are on tight budgets also.
Okay. And so some of the things that you're going to be bringing as your priorities?
You know, certainly it's that protecting children. It's the sexual exploitation of minors. It's the sexual offender registry, protecting some human trafficking changes. We have a vehicular homicide statute that we found in a very horrific case in South Dakota where we lost Dr. Klum and Megan Spindler. They were killed by a drunk driving incident in the parking lot in Charles Mix County, that after we went through the trial and everything, to find that the individual responsible for that would only face, in reality, 4.5 years for killing each person simply is not consistent with what the nature of what is occurring. In fact, in South Dakota, vehicular homicide isn't even designated as a violent offense. And so we need a little bit of work in revamping of that vehicular homicide statute to better protect against the horrific drunk driving cases and to serve as a deterrent. So those are the main things that the Attorney General will be working on. Of course, we have an elder abuse task force that's ongoing. We're a part of that. We're a stakeholder. So I envision you'll see the Attorney General testifying on several different wide policy areas really designed to protect the public.
Okay. And when you bring a packet of bills, does it Is it easygoing for you, or do you really need to prove the need for changes?
You know, I think as Attorney General, I've always taken the position that I, like anybody else, needs to prove the need and prove that it's in a cost-effective way to protect the public. And I've always done that, and I've taken a personal stake in it. I've always testified as the Attorney General on my bills, and that hasn't always been the case. I've just felt that I need to stand in front of the legislature and justify why I'm asking them to do a certain act, either an act that has the potential to take away that liberty or freedom, or an act that could potentially cost dollars, taxpayer dollars, to enforce. And so we've had very strong success. Most of our bills do pass, but it's because I think those bills are common sense. And we put a lot of work into it up front, talking to legislators, talking to members of the community to make sure that this is common sense legislation for South Dakota.
Your role in some of we're seeing nationwide these mass shootings, and I'm wondering in South Dakota what your role would be if by chance something like this happens.
You know, certainly the Attorney General is statutorily responsible for training. That's part of the certification process. So this is a very large part of what we focus on at the Attorney General's office and training every one of our police officers. Whenever there's these type of shootings, whether it be what happened in Sisseton, whether it be what ultimately happened not as a shooting but a fire in Platt, the Attorney General and Division of Criminal Investigation partners up with local law enforcement to do the work. It's interesting that you mention that. As the chairman of the National Attorney General's Association, I have the ability to pick what our initiative is. And our initiative is to protect and serve with 21st century policing. And I'll have the opportunity May 2nd and 3rd to bring all of our nation's attorney generals to South Dakota. And officer-involved shootings, mass shootings, school shootings is high on the priority and part of what that initiative is. That we'll be talking at Mount Rushmore, Crazy Horse, and up in Deadwood about on May 2nd and 3rd with our nation's attorneys general.
Okay. And what types of things did you learn when they talked about the Ferguson shooting and those kinds of things that you're going to bring back here?
You know, from the prosecutor's standpoint, you know, it's a reinforcement of making sure that the investigators and the prosecutors, while these are separate functions, I mean, I think everybody watches on TV Law and Order and you see the two different responsibilities, but keeping them separate, but making sure you communicate, making sure that the investigators and the prosecutors are talking about what needs to be done, that the prosecutors have a say in what additional investigation may be a part of that. We also learned on how to handle the media or not handle the media, that Bob McCullough, the DA that was responsible for ultimately the grand jury process in Ferguson, had a really heart-to-heart conversation with attorney generals on what he went through, what the focus was of that, reinforced how important victim witness coordinators are. We have a couple at the Attorney General's office. Some state's attorneys have them. But when you have a mass shooting, you have many, many victims that need to know what's going on in the process. And so I think those are some of the reinforcement of what we maybe already know, but it'll be, you know, keeping in mind what we need to do if, God forbid, that would ever happen in our home states.
How important is social media in an event like a mass shooting, and does law enforcement rely on it, use it, or do you wish it would just go away?
You know, it really depends upon the circumstance. I mean, there have been case investigations where social media has assisted. I mean, and there's instances when social media can help protect the public by spreading information. But when you look at many of these mass shootings or these high-profile cases, there aren't the protections. I mean, in social media, you can put out anything, and oftentimes it's misinformation. Mm-hmm. So in Ferguson, they talked about that there was so much misinformation on social media, things that could physically have not been possible in relation to that shooting, where, you know, bullet directions and other things could not have happened, what was being discussed in social media. Mm-hmm. And so there's just that warning that the grand jury process and some of the other protections in place in the criminal process is really important. And the hope is always, and I think we're very fortunate in South Dakota, certainly the mainstream media will look at these different social media and other opportunities to gather information. But at the end of the day, the media is always mindful of what's going on in the criminal process and gives us that opportunity to release that information in a timely fashion once we've done our due diligence and checked things out.
And so sometimes you have to undo what people believe is true?
You do, and you have to do that in front of juries. I mean, I've had to do that as Attorney General, standing in front of juries before. And usually the public, as well as juries in South Dakota, understand that. I mean, you can't be too quick to jump to conclusions. I mean, there's that process in place. You need to listen to all the witnesses. And it's that example of Platt. I mean, I think everybody appreciated we needed that 5 or 6 weeks before I could publicly talk to the community about what happened. And everybody's been very patient about the financial investigation, that they want to make sure that we do due diligence, that it's done right, so that we don't jump to inappropriate conclusions.
And do you anticipate some legislation related to that?
You know, certainly. I mean, my job as Attorney General is first and foremost is we've done the death investigation, but is to complete that financial investigation. And I would envision, you know, much like the EB-5, where the legislature turned to the Attorney General and asked what we'd done in the investigation. Of course, it was that point that we disclosed that we had actually prepared a grand jury indictment and were moving forward. So I would anticipate something very similar to that this session. And the legislature, certainly, though, giving the Attorney General and the Division of Criminal Investigations and local authorities that opportunity to do a thorough investigation so we get it right and we make sure we're not making mistakes.
All right. Attorney General Marty Jackley, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on the program today.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Okay, and we'll have you back for updates.